Thank you. Like Ms. Luderman, I'm not a Christian, but I have to admit that I do love Jesus. His story is a pretty wondrous one. I don't mean the miracles and the coming back to life stuff. I mean the stories, the awareness raising, the intentionality, the love. I especially love his ideas about justice and compassion and hope. Take the Sermon on the Mount, for example. The meek will inherit the earth. The merciful will receive mercy. The peacemakers will be called the children of God. He articulated the golden rule during this sermon as well. In everything, do to others as you would have them do to you. And he helped people think of doing good works in a new way, that it came from inside them, telling them, you are the light of the world. Let your light shine before others. Jesus hung out with sinners, with lepers and prostitutes, people who weren't just ignored by society, but purposefully marginalized by the religious leaders of the day. He ate with them and shared stories with them. He told story after story to try to teach people how to be in right relationship with each other, and he showed them by his own example. And he challenged them. He challenged them to learn how to be their best selves, like in the story about the rich man who came to him asking what he had to do to be saved. Jesus reminded him of the commandments, to which the man replied, "Teacher, I have kept all of these since my youth." Jesus, looking at him, loved him and said, "You lack one thing. Go sell what you own and give the money to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come and follow me." His challenge to us to learn how to be our best selves is grounded in a message of radical love and hospitality. The book of Matthew tells that Jesus, when asked by the Pharisees which commandment was the greatest, replied, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment. And a second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself." And then, as Luke tells it, when pressed to define neighbor, Jesus affirmed the humanity of all people with the parable of the Good Samaritan, who cares for an injured Jew despite the deep hatred between their people, and finds him shelter after finding him in the road. We are to love God and everyone with our whole being, and as far as we can tell from what has been written about his life, this is exactly what he did. Love his friends and his enemies, helping them to be their best selves, and forgiving them when they inevitably were not. And so, like many early anti-Trinitarian heretics who expanded the definition of Christianity, it is the example of Jesus that I love. Like Faustus Socinus, a 16th century member of the Polish Reformed Church, I believe Jesus was fully human, no more and no less divine than you or I. And I believe that it is his humanity that makes his example accessible to us. If Jesus was divine, or even somewhere between divine, as some of the early theologians reasoned, how realistic might it be for us to think we might emulate him? But if he was human, it becomes possible. We see throughout the gospel stories of his life how he centered himself in his God and how he was able to move through his life in love. If he could love his enemies, forgive them, when they nailed him to a cross and executed him out of their own fear, then, oh my God, what does that say about the love we are capable of? And what kind of amazing things might we do with that love? This understanding of life-affirming love is one of the things I claim from our Christian heritage. love that can change hearts and minds and the world, shown to us through the lived faith of a man who walked the earth 2,000 years ago. So what might it mean for us to love God with our whole hearts and souls and minds, and to love our neighbors as ourselves? I certainly can't speak for all of us, especially about the first great commandment, given the wide variety of God concepts held by people in our tradition, probably in this congregation. But for me, I use God language to describe that which arises between us, or between ourselves and our surroundings, when we're intentionally in relationship. Even more so when we're doing the things that Matt was talking about earlier. And so for me, loving God with my whole heart and soul and mind means opening myself to that which is around me, of being receptive, aware, grateful for knowing I'm connected to all things and all beings on so many levels. When I'm in this place, I'm more able to start thinking about how to love my neighbor as myself. This is how I'm able to work into my potential for following the example of Jesus' love, and I'm best able to start doing this in community. This is one of the core pieces of Unitarian Universalist practice, and I love how Wendy talked about that earlier in her testimony, right? I almost got up and said, I'm done, Wendy's got it. It's one of the core pieces of our practice. Our seven principles are grounded in this notion of wondrous, radical love, and they serve to guide us as we learn how to live out the ideal of loving our neighbors as ourselves. It is what at our best is freely given when we work together toward the best of our potential, when we practice being our best selves here in community, and when we learn to make positive change in the world around us. We show love for our neighbors when we come together in this space created by shared mission and covenant. You show love for your neighbors when you share your offering plate, when you partner with other UUs and partner with community organizations here in Rockford to work toward peace and justice. These are ways in which we make the kingdom of heaven exist in the here and now, as Jesus said should be our goal. Hosea Ballou, a 19th century Universalist preacher, called this our salvation. He wrote that being made in God's image meant there was no such thing as eternal damnation, that as a good and perfect being, God could not have made us as anything less than good. And that as his children, God loved us so much he couldn't possibly bear to send us to the tortures of hell. He called this universal salvation. We are all saved simply by virtue of being loved by God. Over the course of Ballou's ministry, this belief evolved into a deeper understanding of love, one that led to his conclusion that the kingdom of God was indeed here on earth, and that living a life of love resulted in such happiness that salvation was achieved. Salvation, the kingdom of God, is what happens when we allow love to be that guiding force. There's a story about Ballou from his days of being an itinerant preacher. One afternoon, he was riding his circuit with a Baptist preacher for company, and they were arguing over theology. The Baptist said to him, "Brother Ballou, are you saying if I were a universalist and did not fear the fires of hell, I could hit you over the head, steal your horse and saddle, and ride away, and I would still go to heaven?" Ballou looked over at him and said, "Brother, if you were a universalist, the idea would never occur to you." God's great commandments tell us that we are to love him and each other. These commandments for Ballou constitute universal salvation. Loving God and each other with all our hearts is universal salvation, and this salvation is a life of bliss. If we believe this, doing wrong to our neighbors simply isn't part of our vocabulary. I love this idea. It gives me hope for the possibility of finding or making real, beloved community. It helps me think about my own actions, helps me want to try to start from a place of good, as opposed to thinking about the consequences I might face if I choose poorly. And I understand the reality of our world. Universal salvation only works if everyone buys into it, if doing wrong to our neighbor isn't part of our collective vocabulary. I know that half the time I'm not in that place of appreciation and openness and gratitude that I described earlier, and I can observe people around me sometimes are not either. And so I wonder whether Hosea Ballou's beautiful idea isn't more of an ideal, an optimistic, but maybe unrealistic ideal. The Unitarian minister, William Ellery Channing, a contemporary of Ballou's, had a little bit of a different take on our goodness when he wrote, "The great work of religion is to conform ourselves to God, or to unfold the divine likeness within us." So Channing thought we were made to learn to be good, that we had to work at it. He recognized that as imperfect humans, we did sin, and like most Christians, he believed that our salvation lay in the redemption offered by Jesus' death. This is called atonement theology, this idea that one sacrifice can redeem the sins of all people, and it's the basis of the more traditional Christian idea of salvation. Adam and Eve, in listening to the serpent and eating from the tree of knowledge, disobeyed the rules God had established and tainted all of humankind with original sin. This set us up to need to be saved, and this is what Jesus' death was supposed to accomplish, to atone for that sin. I reject this idea. I believe it's based on a theological contradiction. Even if I could get my head around the idea that one sacrifice could make up for the sins of all, I cannot see as valid the idea that salvation could come out of the violent beating and death of a man who was feared by the establishment for his radical ideas of how we humans should treat each other. I've heard women in a domestic violence shelter talk about confiding in their priests and pastors, only to be told that their faith requires them to submit to the will of their husband. And if that submission means they are beaten, then they should suffer this fate as Jesus suffered his. Their reward will come later, they say, as an afterlife of heavenly bliss. They call this salvation. I call it violence, begetting violence. And beyond this, I reject the concept of original sin from which we are supposed to need salvation. I think Eve did a brave and amazing thing in choosing to disobey the divine order, to limit her understanding of the world so she could remain in paradise. I believe that Eve brought humankind our freedom to explore the world and how we might be in it. It wasn't a fall, it was an awakening. And so, we have nothing to be saved from. Or do we? One of the consequences of that ability to freely explore the world and how we might be in it is that we have choices. And we are just as free to choose paths of fear or anger or hatred as we are to choose paths of openness and balance and love. So what do we do in the face of the violent taking of life in places that are supposed to be safe? In places of worship and schools and nightclubs and movie theaters and on the streets of our neighborhoods? What do we do in the face of walls being built to keep our neighbors out and hate and divisiveness in public speech pitting us against our human siblings? What do we do in the face of institutional systems that still, despite the awakening and hard work of so many people, support racial disparities and mass incarceration? I have come to think of salvation as the thing that helps us deal with the darkness in our lives. That Baptist minister arguing with Hosea Ballou had a point, I think, as did Reverend Channing. They had thought about the darkness in our natures. Our lives and our choices are multifaceted, difficult. It is not always easy to be guided by love. There is pain and suffering and fear, some of it blameless, some of it intentional. We humans are complicated in our understandings of right relationship, and many of us, maybe even all of us sometimes, are less concerned about the impact of our actions on others than on ourselves, our self-made selves. And yet, as people of faith, we aspire to more. We aspire to allow love to be our guiding force, and sometimes we even manage to do this. And this is salvation. When thought of this way, salvation is a process, one with several components. I draw here from the work of Dr. Monica Coleman, a womanist process theologian who defines salvation as that which makes us whole. It is concrete and part of this life. It is survival and justice and quality of life. She calls it making a way out of no way, in which God offers us resources to make change, but it's up to us to take advantage of them. The no way part of this doesn't mean that a path to salvation appears out of nowhere, but out of places maybe not seen or noticed in the past. Making a way out of no way has four parts. There are unforeseen possibilities. There is human agency. There is the goal of justice, and there is the challenge to the existing order. Dr. Coleman says that salvation occurs when people work for the transformation of the world by imitating Christ, and that salvation isn't always liberation and freedom from all pain and suffering, but the quality and survival of life. I went on a service learning trip to Haiti when I was in seminary, and I saw there a manifestation of this process of salvation. While I was preparing for my trip, I learned about the Mokuts, the violent enforcers of the bloody regimes of Haiti's not-so-distant past. One of their practices was what they called necklacing of resistors. Necklacing was taking tires and placing them around the necks of the people, filling them with gasoline and lighting them. So while working with the people of the peasant movement of Papai, a grassroots change organization in Haiti, I learned about and I got to try one of their practices of making a way out of no way. They transformed old tires into container gardens. And those gardens, two of them, could grow enough vegetables for a family trying to survive. People worked in pairs. They would take the tire and take a machete and cut out one of the sidewalls while standing on the thing to hold it in place. And then they stood on the tire and they flipped it inside out so that the treads were on the inside, and they put a board across the hole that was the bottom, so to create a bowl, and then they covered the whole thing on the inside with sealant, filled them with soil, put them in greenhouses. There was unforeseen possibility in those tires. There was human agency in the deliberate use of an old symbol of terror to make a practical and active and symbolic use of hope. And the goal of justice and challenge to the existing order by this activist organization working in community. All of that, survival, justice, and quality of life, become possible in this single action done in community. And so as I think whether salvation can have any meaning in my own theology or in Unitarian Universalism, I find myself convinced that it has to be based on the living exemplar that was Jesus, rather than on the single event of his death. His ministry offers us tools with which to move into the process of salvation, teaching, healing, praying, welcoming, sharing, suffering with, all things that we do in community, connected to each other. So for me, salvation happens in community, in our understanding that we're all connected, in my understanding of a God that is interwoven in our relationships with each other and everything that's around us. Salvation is in our ability to care for each other in the face of hate and evil and fear, to work to protect our vulnerable, to push back against the interwoven systems of oppression until they are replaced with systems of compassion and care. It is in our ability to face those fears when we are supporting each other, like that bundle of sticks. We can ground in the idea that everything we do is based on what happened in the past, the possibilities for the future, and how we combine those things as we move forward together. May it be so, and may we be so.